First of all, I'd like to thank the Occupational Health and Safety Section Scientific Award Committee for this recognition this year. We're all honored to have been recognized among the award recipients. I'd also like to acknowledge my co-authors on this paper, two of whom are here today, Linda Delp, Deo Gracia Cornelio, and Sarah Jacobs, who we all work together at the UCLA Labor Occupational Safety and Health Program. And I don't have a slide to prove it, but I have no relationships to disclose. So the paper I'm discussing today is entitled From Agricultural Fields to Urban Asphalt, the Role of Worker Education to Promote California's Heat Illness Prevention Standard. The paper itself describes UCLA LOSHA's efforts in the summer of 2012 to reach and educate workers and worker advocates about the state's relatively new heat illness prevention standard. This is a standard that was promulgated in 2006. It covers all outdoor workers in the state, and to date, it's only one of two state heat-related standards in the country. The paper itself outlines the strategies that we at LOSHA adopted to carry out this campaign in Southern California to reach workers in targeted high-hazard industries, including not only agriculture, but also large workforces in the urban areas of our region, so from agricultural fields to urban asphalt, and also analyzes some of the impacts of our efforts within the region. Over the course of the project and in writing this paper, we grappled with a larger question, which we also dealt with here, which is sort of the role that worker education can play in supporting effective implementation for new or existing health and safety standards. This is, of course, not a question that's unique to the heat standard in California, but for us it was particularly salient given the social and economic vulnerabilities of many of the impacted workforces in this case. A lot of immigrant workers, non-union, low-wage, non-English speaking. And those vulnerabilities really pose some particular challenges for developing an effective program to ensure that all workers would enjoy their full access to rights under this new law. So the paper itself includes sort of an extended discussion and reflection on this question, and what I'd like to do is to discuss that in part today. So what I'm planning to do in the next 15 minutes or so is I'll provide a little bit of background on the California heat standard itself and the context in Southern California where we were doing this work. I'll describe in a little more detail LOSHA's campaign efforts and some of the indications that we have of the impacts those efforts have had. And then I'll return to this larger question about the role that worker education can play in supporting implementation of health and safety standards. So as I mentioned before, the standard in California was promulgated in 2006, and it largely was the result of a response to concerns in the agricultural industries in California, where there was an excess of heat-related fatalities in 2004 and 2005 as a result of some serious heat waves throughout the state. It was initially introduced as emergency legislation by Governor Schwarzenegger, and then the following year it was enacted as law. The resulting standard, as I noted, covers only outdoor workers, and there's a number of reasons why it got framed that way, and it includes four main provisions, as you can see here. So employers under this law must provide workers with adequate drinking water and shade structures. They must allow workers to take rest breaks if needed to recover from the heat. They need to develop an emergency response plan for heat illness, and there's a training requirement for workers and supervisors to prevent heat illness. In the years following the introduction of the standard, there were a lot of pressures from worker advocates basically arguing that CalOSHA wasn't really doing enough to enforce this new standard, and some continued heat-related fatalities in agriculture a few years later triggered a lawsuit on behalf of the California Rural Legal Assistance Foundation and the ACLU against CalOSHA for not doing enough to implement the standard. And so as a result, in 2011, CalOSHA dedicated funds to launch a heat-wide state heat illness prevention campaign. And the goal of the campaign was to raise awareness of the heat illness standard among employers, workers, and worker advocates in targeted high-hazard industries, including agriculture, construction, and landscaping. CalOSHA contracted with three university-based programs throughout the state, UCLA LOSH in Southern California, as well as the Labor Occupational Health Program at UC Berkeley, and the Western Center for Agricultural Safety and Health at UC Davis. And together we worked to develop educational materials and a social marketing campaign throughout the state to conduct a series of trainings with key organizations and target groups, and then to evaluate the results. And I want to acknowledge the three university partners who worked on this project did a tremendous amount of work under this statewide campaign. The paper that we're presenting and we wrote really focuses on the way we were able to take that campaign and adapt it to the particular needs in Southern California. So that's really what I'm going to be focusing on, but that's not to minimize, of course, any of the work that was done by others. So for those of you who may not be familiar with Southern California, I have a little map here. Southern California is an enormous geographic area. It comprises about 10 counties. The LA-San Diego metro area alone is home to about 22 million people, so it's an enormous urban area. And nearly 60% of the state's workforce is concentrated here in this region, and in LA County alone, about 25% of our state's workforce is just in LA County. So it's huge, a huge population. It's also a very diverse population. Los Angeles, Orange County, San Diego, we have very large immigrant groups. One-third of residents in LA County alone are foreign-born. 56% speak a language other than English at home. So those tend to pose challenges for a lot of the work that we do in terms of doing worker education and outreach. In addition, given the size of the region, we have huge industry diversity. So in the inland areas and stretching down to the U.S.-Mexico border, there's a lot of agricultural work. But also, there are large urban industries whose workers are also covered by this standard. So commercial and residential construction workers, landscaping, car wash, warehouse, waste hauling, and transportation. And of course, given its latitude, its position in lower latitudes, it's sort of a desert area, there's the potential for soaring temperatures in the long summer months. In addition, Southern California also boasts some notable strengths, one of which is that there's really an active network there of labor and community-based organizations, worker centers, and worker advocacy groups. And in recent years in particular, there's been the emergence of some really innovative campaigns, particularly working with immigrant workers in industries such as car wash, warehouse, hotel, and waste recycling. And so when we aimed to develop a program targeted to the region, we really wanted to not only address those challenges of the region, but also to build on these existing strengths. So let me explain a little bit about the approach we used on this project. Our approach was based on three central premises. So the first is that effective outreach needed to include community-based partnerships that build on established relationships of trust and that enhance mutual exchange of resources. Given the large geographic area and our limited resources as a program at UCLA, partnerships were crucial for making sure that we could get information out as widely as possible, and to make sure that people have the information that they need. So we adopted a multi-tiered outreach strategy, which involved integrating community health promoters, or promotoras, into the core program planning and training activities. We hired three promotoras under this campaign, all three of whom had previous health promotion experience and had completed other health and safety training and skills building courses that were offered by Loesch. And we worked with the promotoras to go across the region and identify worker advocacy and community organizations and to recruit staff members to participate in training courses that we were organizing. Part of the outreach really involved working with organizations that we at Loesch already have existing relationships with in the LA region and really bringing them into this campaign. But a lot of the work the promotoras were able to do was able to go beyond that into outlying counties where we had less presence so far and really identify some key advocates who could really support the work that we were doing. In the end, over a two-month period during that summer, our promotoras reached a total of 70 community organizations across Southern California and recruited 159 representatives of those organizations to attend training courses that we offered. So the second premise of our campaign was that successful worker education needs to incorporate principles of popular or empowerment education that combines knowledge and critical analysis with skills to enable action. And in order to do this, so the statewide campaign had developed some standard educational materials for use in training across California. You can see an example of that on the left side here. These are materials that were developed in the first year of the campaign. They were produced in five separate languages. And they included, as you see here, sort of simple messages and diagrams to take literacy issues into account. The courses themselves that were organized throughout the state included structured an agenda that included educating participants about workplace heat hazards, the new Cal OSHA standard, and to prepare them to become peer trainers in their own communities. So it was a training of trainer model that we were using. The folks who participated in these courses were in turn going back to their communities and their constituents and conducting similar trainings with those groups. In the summer of 2012, the health promoters and LOSH staff co-facilitated 5-day-long Spanish language TOT courses in 5 separate counties throughout the Southern California region. A total, those 159 representatives of organizations were the participants of those courses. And the promotores were really key in helping us to adapt some of these core materials that were developed for the statewide campaign to the particular educational and social needs of the target groups in our region. They had done some interviews with some key informants in our area. They also brought their own personal and professional experiences to bear. And the training sessions, as a result of that, we incorporated things like cultural issues that sort of built in participants' own perception of heat. And we also built in kind of dialogue about the power dynamics that workers were facing in the workplace. So often the presentation of technical information about heat hazards was inseparable from larger concerns that participants had about work organization and employment status. For example, in discussing the need for water, shade, and rest, participants often noted that access to water or the ability to take breaks was constrained by the fact that they were being paid by the piece on a job site, or that they had other production quotas that were being imposed on them, so they didn't want to leave their work to go take these preventive measures. And so the TOT facilitators and the promotores really had to work to address these concerns and acknowledge the practical limitations of the heat illness prevention standard in mitigating these underlying causes that are exacerbating hazards, the heat-related hazards that workers are facing. And on the right side here is an example of one of those courses that was conducted. And then, in addition, the courses included opportunities for participants to not only practice their training skills that they could use when they got back into their communities, but also participants completed action plans to describe the outreach and education activities they planned to do when they got back to their organizations. And these action plans really helped participants focus on particular goals and establish a direction for the work that they were to do after they participated in these courses. The third and final component I just want to highlight in terms of the way we structured this campaign was related to capacity building. The need for organizational capacity building among community and worker advocacy groups is key to supporting the action that those peer trainers were to carry out in their communities, and also for those organizations to be able to mobilize for more effective health and safety policies. And what we did is thought about capacity building sort of in 2 separate ways. One is the training and skills building that was provided to the staff members who were participating in these courses. And then the other part was being able to sort of strengthen relationships between organizations across the region. So one way to do that was by having these train-the-trainer programs in 5 separate counties. Each of those programs brought together organizations within the county, some of whom had worked together, others who hadn't. But those courses, in turn, then became an opportunity for these organizations to connect and share resources and sort of learn about what each other was doing. In addition, Cal OSHA staff members from regional offices in each of those areas were invited to participate in these TOT courses. And that facilitated further regional partnerships between the organizations themselves and the agency. So it sort of put a face to the agency. And a number of those Cal OSHA staff were really valuable advocates in wanting to work with these community organizations to make sure that this and other health and safety standards were applied. In terms of the campaign impact, the statewide heat illness campaign conducted an evaluation kind of across the region. We were also particularly interested in looking at the impacts of our education and capacity building efforts to demonstrate how these organizations had integrated heat-related concerns into their campaigns. So, for example, a number of the peer trainers who participated in these courses in turn went out and conducted workshops on heat illness hazards. As a result of having Cal OSHA members participating in these meetings, there actually was an agreement among regional community organizations to have quarterly meetings with Cal OSHA staff to really have discussions about how the agency could be more responsive to more general issues related to immigrant workers, and also how the agency could how worker advocacy groups could work better to sort of enhance their work with the agency. And then there were worker leaders in the car wash campaign and warehouse campaign who filed complaints to Cal OSHA incorporating violations of the heat standard, and those were citations were forthcoming as a result. So we sort of see that as, an impact of the larger work that we've been doing to try to support these organizations. Now, I want to just get back to this larger question that I raised at the beginning about the strengths and limitations of worker education to support the implementation of standards. We really were grappling with this question of how can we, as a training institute, help to make sure that these standards have teeth on the ground. And, you know, we faced a number of challenges about how to educate workers on this standard, given the vulnerabilities that a lot of these impacted workers faced, the precarious nature of work, piece rate issues. And the socio-political realities for many of the workers impacted by the standard and the power dynamics that they face each day in the job put real practical limits on how far our education efforts could go. So I want to just raise kind of a quick point of comparison, which I think is helpful for thinking about this situation. If you look back to the 1980s and efforts to develop education programs following promulgation of the OSHA's Hazard Communication Standard in 1983 or the Hazardous Waste Operations and Emergency Response Standard in 1989, their labor unions really played a key role not only in passing the standard but making sure that those standards were meaningful. And so education programs that were developed to implement the training mandates of those standards were often developed in the context of labor management collaborations. And evaluations of those programs really highlighted the way in which those standards could be used as a tool and applied most effectively in a context of management and union support for worker action. The challenge here is that for most of these impacted workers, there's not that institutional mechanism that can provide a support to make sure that the information is relevant. So here we have largely non-union work settings where the standard applies. In those settings, it excludes the possibility for labor management collaboration. And there's a lot of challenges in turn. So I want to share this quote that was from one of our peer trainers that I think really illustrates this challenge well. He says, "We have to be very careful, we have to be very cautious with the ranch owners and what we distribute if we want them to continue to allow us to enter the ranches and speak with the workers. For that reason, we've limited the education materials that we distribute to those that focus on heat illness prevention, symptoms, and treatment. In terms of regulations, fines, and obligations of los patrones, we prefer to distribute them outside the ranch for obvious reasons." So really, the challenges of not having management support or a labor management arrangement that could really support this standard, where we saw this frequently. In addition, in some industries where workers were covered by this standard, contingent work arrangements meant that workers often had no clear employer or didn't know who was responsible for providing the protective measures in the first place. And then, as I mentioned, the piece rate structures in agriculture that and other industries that meant that pressures from employers to meet production quotas or the workers' own desire to earn as much as possible was conflicting with the need to take breaks or recover from the heat. We had peer trainers in TOT sessions who were reporting that agricultural workers were reluctant to drink water during their shifts for fear of having to take additional restroom breaks, and that the negative incentive inherent in this piece rate system really shifts the burden for health and safety protections onto the workers themselves and undermines the implementation of appropriate heat illness prevention measures. So for us, this was, I think we as an organization really have come to believe in the importance of community-based partnerships and collaboration in trying to promote standards enforcement for these vulnerable worker populations. It really points to the need to get worker advocacy organizations, community-based groups involved in these processes. By having an organization that can advocate on behalf of a larger worker group, it creates a more solid foundation to support worker action when there are health and safety problems in particular work sites. And it really helps worker education in that situation to become one of a number of tools that can be used to promote standards enforcement. And as we move forward with some of the lessons we've learned on this and other projects working with these vulnerable groups, we really see this model of collaborative work as an avenue for creating an opportunity for non-union workers in low-wage jobs to participate more actively in the regulatory arena. So, thank you very much.